And now a message from Manic Movie Monday. Hi, Mawkaw Army. We at Manic Movie Monday love our fans, and as such, we love helping our fans. We believe that everybody needs a little help now and then. So if you have a cause, a GoFundMe, or a new venture you'd like us to shout out, maybe you're starting a podcast, we got you covered. Just send us a DM on Instagram and we'll do the rest. Stay positive and stay manic.
I ache for the touch of your lips, dear, but much more for the touch of your whips, dear. You can raise welts like nobody else as we dance to the masochism tango.
That's right, it's 1987's Hellraiser. And I have chosen for this show an awesome woman who I admire, who keeps the Friends of Horror Weekly group a safe space to talk about horror. And she's awesome. I'm just happy to have her on here. Michelle is here.
Hi.
Hi.
Glad to be here. Hopefully I don't embarrass the group too much, you know, with this. But I know a lot of people are a fan of this show. I'm kind of newer to it. I've only watched a couple of episodes, and I listened to American Werewolf in London since the anniversary was yesterday. I was listening to that to prepare for this. So
lengthy one. Yeah, I know some of the episodes, especially if I have a guest on, they tend to be much lengthier. Then Hill and I are very much like, we got an hour. Like, let's do that. You know, like, we got an hour, and I usually edit out about 5 minutes. So it ends up coming in either under an hour or like a little bit above an hour. But for the most part, we're very like boom, boom, boom. Whereas when you have guests on, everybody has their own perspective, their own story, their own whatever. So I try to give space for that. So yeah, those are the episodes that usually end up being about, you know, the 90 minutes. What is your background with this? Because I gave you a list and you chose Hellraiser. So I would love to know what your background is with this movie.
Well, this is one of those times where I feel like people either think my dad is the greatest parent or the worst parent, because he took me to the theater. He took my sister and I to the theater to see this at 8 and 10. I saw it in the theater in 87. I guess now with streaming and trailers and things like that, you know a lot more about movies when you're going into them. And I guess it's been almost 40 years, but mm-hmm. you know, at the time it was just like, I can't remember what I saw, maybe just Pinhead or whatever. And that was enough for me to be like, I want to see this. And then you go to see it. And of course at the time I wasn't really understanding a lot of the things that were going on. And of course you don't understand, you know, why Julia's doing, you know, is willing to do all the, you know, you don't really understand the sexual aspects of it until you get a lot older. And then it's not until like you kind of have relationships like Frank that you're kind of like, yeah, I get that. Like, I get like the lengths that you'll go to for like the best sex ever. Like, oh, I have to kill people so that we can start having sex again.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Like, like, sure. I'm going to do that. I actually saw it in the theater in 87.
That's amazing. I was gifted this by my brother. My brother's 10 years older than I am. And I'm 45 and he's 55. He gifted me like a VHS copy of it. And I was like 13 and I didn't understand any of it. And also I was just like, this isn't for me, you know, like being a 13 or 14 year old girl, you know, I was just like this, I don't understand this. And so, but then I saw it in like my 20s and 30s and was like, yeah, this is cool. Like, I love the gore and I love Clive Barker. And, you know, I have not read any of his stuff. My boyfriend, on the other hand, has read Hellbound Heart and a lot of his things. And so, you know, he's really interested in that stuff. I've just was like, you know, this is cool. It's a good movie. When I saw it in my 40s, However, it took on a totally different tone for me. Not just the pursuit of pleasure at any cost, which kind of goes to both myself and Hillary being recovering addicts, but also the fact that I had not had the best sex of my life till I was 43. And then when you've had the best sex of your life, you're like, yeah, I could totally kill a couple dudes to preserve that. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Like, I used to just sort of snicker at women in meetings who would say, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, he's been to prison and he's back in prison again, and I think I'm gonna go pick him up, and you know, I really think we can give it a good go this time. And I'm just like, girl, you don't, whatever, respect yourself, right? No. Now
Well,
I am that woman. I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get it. Yeah, sure.
it's funny too. I mean, for you it might be different, but it's like Amy Schumer in I'm not sure what movie it was. She says that like you don't marry the best sex of your life. You don't marry the best dick. Your best dick is like the guy who's like now in prison or like that somehow like your best sex is always tied up with like someone who's like totally bad for you, treat you like shit, like all this stuff, but like you just like are just to you're just totally like either I can change him or like you know they're bad, but just the sex is so fantastic. Get that where it's just like this person's gonna lead you to ruin, but you just absolutely cannot like break yourself free from them. And like I think a lot of women have had like that one, you know, hopefully just one. Like for me, it was just one where it was like this 10-year span where I just like could not get away from this person. We were on and off for the better part of a decade where it would get really it would be really intense and really awesome. And then it would be really off. And then we would split off. And then a few years later, we'd think we were smarter and wiser. And then, like, he'd, you know, and then, like, the bullshit started happening all over again and stuff. And I still hope he never shows up again because I don't know if I am wise enough now to be like, stay away from me. Or if I'm gonna be like, man, like that, you know, like the sex was so awesome. Like maybe I can like keep it in perspective this time. Like I, you know, I hope that because it's been probably about 10 years since I've seen him that I'm hoping it's
Oh.
like, you know, like I just like just don't ever have him cross paths with me again because I'm not sure. Even knowing how awful he is, if I could, if you know, if I could, you know, that I might be like, oh, we can just be friends, or oh, you know, we can just have casual sex and it'll be fine. And then
Oh, it'll
all of
be
a sudden,
fine.
and
Oh,
then all of a
yeah.
sudden, you're like mired in it all over again.
Well, we Hillary and I have a great saying, which we said it on, I think we said it on the Intruder episode, which is great sex always comes with a Department of Corrections number.
Yep.
So that's, and
Yep.
I think, yeah, I like I said, I don't know, some about your 40s too is the other thing, is like your sex drive is very different than it is in your
Why
30s, than
does
it is
that
in your
happen?
20s. Like you
Why does
just
that
go
happen?
bonkers, and you have to have someone who either as perverted as yourself or has the sex drive you do. But when you meet somebody who is your best friend, who also has the kind of sex drive you do, you're like, oh shit, okay, this is cool.
I don't understand why it's.
Mm-mm.
Well, I guess it must be something where your body's like preparing you for menopause
I
and, you
guess,
know, and being
yeah.
like, well, you're not going to want sex anymore, like once
Right.
menopause is over.
That's
So,
what I've
you
heard.
know, let's have a big bang
Yeah.
now. Like I don't,
It's weird.
yeah,
It's
I don't
weird.
understand it. And it's really caused me to have a lot of like body acceptance and things like that because it's just like you know you're not as banging it like I mean I guess you could accept like women are beautiful at every age but it's just like stuff's not in the same places that it was in your 20s and you don't have the same energy as you have in your 20s and you're like can I really have the same kind of sex life that I had and you
Yeah.
can
Oh, you because you're tired, man. Like I'm a pillow princess. I cheer you on, you know. But like anytime I have decided to deviate from the routine, right? The routine, it's like I pull my lower back. I'm fucked up. I'm out for like 2 days, you know, where I just can't figure out like what happened. And it's like, you know, were you in a kickboxing class? You know, did you? No, you just decided that you were going to get on all fours and you're 45 and out of shape. Yeah. So that's the thing. So getting back to Hellraiser, as we play, if you're
Yes,
just
this is the
joining
sex in
us,
your 40s. This is
this
the
is
sex in your
sex
40s
in your
episode.
40s. That's what we're discussing today. So this movie, nope, really, it does. This movie opens in Morocco, where we meet Frank. He's very sweaty. He's a sweaty, sweaty guy. And there is a person who says, "What's your pleasure?" And he's like, "That. I want that. Whatever that box is right there, I want that." And starts playing with the lament configuration.
Yes.
And then we see hooks rip into his skin, and cut to a really cool house that looks like it's seen better days. And yeah. And now, so there is this idea behind, because you don't really know what's happening. You just know that he played with the box.
Well, and I'm never gonna buy some random thing from some Chinese guy. It kind of reminded me of like Gremlins, where, you know, he's like the dad goes to the shop in Gremlins to like look for something for his kid and like ends up bringing a gizmo home. Like, if there's some Chinese guy offering me some random weird thing, like I'm gonna say, you know, I'm gonna say no. Like, I feel like horror movies have taught me that. Like, don't buy stuff from weird Chinese guys.
Yeah, like here, take this sexual Rubik's Cube home and let me know how it goes,
Well,
you
and it
know?
makes me wonder too, like how did Frank even like know to try to find that box, and like what was he told about it, that, you know, for him it's just, you know, he's, you know, that, I mean, that's Frank's problem, is that like he just can't, he's kind of insatiable as far as his pursuit of pleasure is concerned, and that leads him down, you know, this path where he ends up getting, you know, torn apart. But, you know, it's like, what was he kind of promised about what the box would do? Like, did he think that like he would play with it and like a bunch of like naked chicks would show up or something like that? Like what did he really think was gonna happen from this box, you know? And yeah, and then he ends up getting torn apart. And I still, like, I've seen Hellraiser probably 1,000 times, and yet the scene where at the beginning where you're seeing like the spinning wood with like body parts
With the
attached
body
to it,
parts on
and
it?
like all of this like visceral s stuff everywhere, you know, and then the Cenobites, like it's unlike, I mean, still to this day, you know, almost 40 years later, I can't say that I've seen anything, you know. I mean, I guess for Event Horizon is kind of sort of like, you know,
Yeah, it's like
in the same
Hellraiser in
kind of
space.
vein. You know, they did a Hellraiser in
And they did
space,
a
I
Hellraiser in space too. Yeah. I'm
thought.
surprised Leprechaun hasn't gone to space at this point.
I
Like,
thought he did go to space.
did Leprechaun go to
Maybe I'm
space?
wrong. I feel like that's the logical step as franchises progress. It's like, we got to go to outer space. Like, Jason went to space.
Jason went to space. Oh, God.
Yeah, that was all truly, truly frightening to me. And it was great, because last week I did a watch party for Hellraiser, to get kind of other people's perspectives. And there were a couple people that had never seen Hellraiser before. So it was kind of, you know, it's awesome when that happens, because when you've seen something a million times, like, it's not, you know, it's not new to you anymore. So to show that to someone else, and then the kind of questions that they ask and the things that they, you know, and it was like, so the consensus was kind of that this was a really gooey movie. And I'm like, it is, like, there's, you know, like, it's just really a
It's
lot.
gooey.
Yeah, it's just a lot of gross, you know, snot like stuff that's involved in like regenerating.
Slime.
Yeah.
So we meet our family who has moved, who has inherited the house. We have Larry, who is a very milquetoast, like just buttoned up kind of by the book guy. His wife Julia, who is also a very repressed English woman, if you will. They walk into this house and they're kind of walking around, and he makes reference to his brother Frank, who we know is wildly just unreliable and irresponsible. And then the house itself is the kitchen, like with the bugs and the everything, it's just
The
like
rats, the
rats, and
rats.
it's just gross, and yeah, and so it definitely is not where I would want to make a home, as it were. But yeah, Larry, it's their, is it their childhood home? Because you've seen this a thousand times, so.
Well, I think at a certain point he says something like that about an old lady, which I don't know if that was like their mom, and he was just
Right.
calling her old
Old
lady,
lady.
and that she didn't want to let go of it or something like that. And but he had said something that he hadn't been to the house in like 10 years, so it's something that they've had. And I guess that was, and then that was Frank's getaway place or something like that. I'm not
Right.
sure who he was trying to get away from, but there was kind of an impression that people were kind of
Yeah.
after, Frank. And then that had been kind of where he had recently been holding up, because that's where he got torn apart. But I kind of got the impression that there was like a lot of years between when Julia met Frank and they had their affair, and then where we are now. And when Julia first meets Frank, like she seems like she's actually genuinely happy. And then Frank comes along and awakens the beast. And,
Yeah,
you know, and then.
Frank shows up, like literally, like let's paint the picture for you folks. Frank shows up in the rain in a black leather jacket looking like a member of Grease. Like he's just kind of leaning in there and he's just like, "Well, hello. I'm here to fuck you on your wedding dress." And she's like, "Oh, you know." So and that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, and that it just seemed like after that, she couldn't find happiness. Like that was it for her being happy in any way. Like Frank was just like this drug, and now that this drug had been taken away, she couldn't find any kind of enjoyment in her life anymore. And then so she's thinking about him, and you got to talk about the nail
The
scene
nail scene. I love this
where
juxtaposition between,
the
they're
pleasure and
moving.
pain.
Right, pleasure and pain. They're moving stuff into the house, and the movers are just totally useless, by the way. And Larry is like, "Well, I guess I gotta help you move this mattress." I'm like, "What are you paying them for?" And so he's moving the mattress, and it's such a great scene because it's this scene of you can see the nail, and the nail is very, very close to his hand. And it's juxtaposed by Julia thinking about what it was like to fuck Frank. And they go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth until Larry pierces. It is such an uncomfortable, visceral scene.
Well, it's funny because people won't care about how the gross, like eaten bodies and stuff like that, but it's just like watching his hand get torn up by that nail. People are like, "Oh, I can't do it.
You're like, "Oh my God." It's like, ow, ow, ow. That just hurts.
so
That just hurts watching it, right?
gross."
And so he comes in, he's bleeding, and he comes into Frank's fuck dungeon, which is basically just like an attic type room. There's just like a messy, disgusting mattress on the floor, and take care. There's not much else going
Well,
on
I'm
there.
not sure. I think the mattress was later. I think when she
Is the
first went in the room, there was
There was
nothing in
nothing
there.
there,
Yeah,
just the
the
pictures. She
mattress
finds
was
the
just,
pictures.
yeah, I think
Okay.
the mattress was once like she was bringing like her afternoon
Right, afternoon
delight
delights.
home, and then it was like, oh, like I don't want to just do it on the floor or something
Yeah.
like
Oh,
that. And
I'm a proper English woman. I'm not, yeah, no. So
so yeah, when she first goes in there, there,
she
you know,
finds the
like there's
pictures, 'cause that's what triggers her memory, is she sees these Polaroids of Frank and many women, and she's just like, "Oh, I miss that dick." You know.
Well, I thought it was great that she wasn't like jealous or anything like that,
No, she's
or like,
fascinated
you
by it.
know, yeah, that, you know, she's, you know, just like, I'm gonna hold on to this one, stick this one in my pocket, you know,
Here's one for my wallet.
yeah, this one's for when I'm feeling lonely later in the
Throw
bathtub,
this in my spank bank.
and
And so, but so Larry comes in, he's bleeding all over the place, and now we see that his blood is causing the floorboards to do a little dance. And we don't really know what's going on, but he leaves. And that is when we realize that Frank is being resurrected by blood. He shows himself, I should say, to Julia, and Julia's like, I want the dick. I just don't want the dick that bad. And he's like, you know, don't look at me. But he tells her, he's like, I need blood. I need more blood. So whatever that means. And that means that Miss Julia has to meet guys at an airport bar and bring them home, kill them, so that Frank can. Now, it's weird because there's this scene, I love this scene too, where she brings, you know, weird English guy home and kills him with the hammer, and then the body falls and Frank like slithers across the floorboards to get to him, and you're like, is he gonna eat him?
Well, I'm never sure. And
What does he do?
the main thing, like you hear this slurping, like
Oh,
he's drinking them or
is he
something. Like it's
drinking
the
him?
slurping. I don't know. All I know is that the thing that I mainly remember is like this kind of slurping noise that you hear as she's like closing the door or running off and
Right.
stuff like, you know,
Leave
stuff like
me.
that. And I you know, you don't realize it. You know, I don't even know if I fully realized it until these last times that I watched it, how great the female performances are in this movie. Like with Julia, you can really feel this I don't know, struggle between being absolutely horrified by what she's doing and yet also being kind of, I don't know if turned on is the right thing,
Fascinated?
but like exhilarated or something like that. 'Cause when she kills like the first guy, you know, there's almost like a smile, but then she's also like trembling and like
Horrified.
wants to get this blood off of her. And then she like sees what is left after, you know, Frank, and is just like, oh my, you know, like, oh my God, like what am I, you know, what am I doing? And yet, like somehow, like through the process, it becomes, you know, and like when she brings the first guy home too, like she doesn't want him touching her, and you know,
Yeah, he gets
she's
kind of
really,
rapey in the hallway. Like he kind of like, you know, takes it t takes takes it into his own hands, so to speak.
you really feel that, the horror of what she's doing, and like that she must really, really want Frank back in order to do these things. And of course Frank lies to her, because he's just like, oh, well, you'll only need to do this like one more time, and then like I'll be fixed. And then it's like one becomes two, becomes three, becomes the
Right. Then we
husband,
can run
becomes
away
her,
together.
you know. Yeah. And it's just, oh, and that's, you know, how many times have, you know, have guys told you shit, you know, that you want to hear, so
Oh,
that you'll
yeah.
do, you know, so that you'll do what they want, that like then we'll run away together and we'll be together, and it's, you know, it will go, you know, no one will ever find us, and
Oh, I just need you to make this change. I just need you to compromise yourself in this way. And then we can be together, and nobody will, you know, nobody will try to interrupt our happiness, and we can just ride off into the sunset, you know, me in my 20s. Yeah, so it's relatable too, as just as a person, not just as a woman, but just as a person who I have been in those relationships before where you bargain yourself down, you know, where you're just like, oh, I can handle you being like this, right? And then you're like, okay, well, I can handle you being like this, and I can handle you being like this, and I can handle this. And you just kind of justify shit behavior because either you don't love yourself enough to not want to be hurt, or you think, okay, if I change this, and this, and if I keep my mouth shut about this, and this, well, then they'll love me, and that's really the ultimate goal, right? So it's yeah, that could be a whole other episode.
Well, and that it's the bad is temporary because you have this memory bank of the fantastic sex or the good times. And so you say, well, this bad stuff is only temporary and I just have to do this and then we'll be happy again. Watching this now, it's like this is to me, like this is Julia's movie, and like her and her descent into being completely betrayed and ruined. That like, and to me, like Frank is actually the bad guy, is the bad guy in this.
No, I
Like
don't think the Cenobites are bad at all. I think
like
the
yeah the Senate
Cenobites,
Yeah, the Cenobites are like, you called us here, like we're doing this because you asked us to. And so like once you open the box, like this is what happens and this is the way it is. Like they, they're kind of like the law or something like that. But it's like Frank's the one who's willing to sacrifice his brother's wife, his brother, his niece, like random dudes. Like he doesn't care about any of them. It's just what he needs to do so that he can get away from the Cenobites and live his life again, and whoever he has to use in order to be fully human and be able to get away, like he's just gonna do whatever it takes. And like to me, like his it shows like the extent, like his pursuit of pleasure, and like wanting to like have sex with your niece and stuff like that. I mean, like
Bro.
that's when you've kind of like when your sexuality has gotten into Freudian,
Territory.
and where you've really got to kind of look at yourself and your, when you can't be satisfied, and you're looking at your niece like, hey, come to daddy, like
Nothing,
ew,
nothing,
like
nothing dries my vagina up
away
faster
from
than a guy
me,
saying, come to daddy. Let me just tell
get
you that right
away from
now.
me, creepy uncle.
For
Like, and
Christ, man.
we haven't even talked about Kirsty,
No, and I
Kirsty
was gonna
yet.
say, you brought up the fact that this is, that we have these amazing female performances, like we have Julia, but now we also have Kirsty, and Kirsty is there. It's her stepdaughter, his actual daughter, Larry's daughter, and played by Ashley Lawrence. And
Her first
she,
movie,
her first
her
movie,
very first movie.
and she's fantastic. She's great. She seems very capable. She doesn't want to live with them, even though Larry, wants her to live with them. She's like, yeah, I'm cool. I'm gonna find my own place and get a job and maybe get some dick from this guy who does cigarette tricks with his mouth. Like, I'm over here. I'm living my life. You guys do your thing. But she's also very devoted to her father, and she has this fear that I think, I know I did for the longest time when my father was alive, was just this fear of losing your father, that fear of losing that, whatever that is. And so she is consistently checking on him because she doesn't trust Julia. She thinks Julia's, wicked stepmother, and rightfully so.
Yeah. Well, I'd never thought about that because they do mention, because the movers say something about that Kirstie must have gotten her mother's looks, and he says her mother's dead. And like I hadn't thought about that you kind of are extra fearful about your other parent when you lose one, you're extra anxious or whatever about the well-being of your, of the one that's still living. And but you know, she has dreams about, like, she has dreams about things, you know, about something bad happening to her father. But yeah, she's completely opposite of Julia, although they both have similar taste in men, because I totally would not have fallen for like the cigarette trick. Like he had like the worst game in the world. She's like, yeah, like I'll want me some of that. Like
She's
I'm
like,
thinking this guy, like I would be like get away from me. And yet she was all about like all about his. She said something like she wasn't going to be able to stand up anymore if she had any more to drink. And he's like, well, then lie down.
Then lie
And
down.
I'm like, oh
I
my God, like these are the
know.
worst pickup things in
It's
the
like, dude, in
entire
front of
world.
her dad?
Yeah, and he's all
Bro.
like, yeah, and the dad's all, you know, the dad's all like, oh, like look at this, like that them they're terrible flirting, like, you know, and yeah.
No.
I
No,
mean, he did
absolutely.
seem like, I mean, in his defense, he did seem like he was a genuinely good guy, and like he came at the end and was rescuing her and stuff, or like helping her out. But yeah, I would not have fallen for his game at all.
Oh
Not at
God,
all.
no, he seemed creepy. So Frank is now sort of a person. He has developed. He's wearing a dress shirt and smoking a cigarette, one of my favorite shots from this movie. And he's like, I can taste this, you know, like he's very excited about being able to, you know, indulge in a vice, right? You know, it's like,
Hey, I mean,
hey,
he's already killing people,
right?
so
He's killing
I
people.
mean,
He's
you know.
fantasizing about his niece. Like, we have to get away from here because the Cenobites are gonna find me. And she's like, what? You know, and talks about how they took him to the limits of pleasure and pain, and I didn't care which. And that's a big thing, is his absolute hedonistic, you know, need for wanting that, and then Julia's need for Frank. You know, and I think this movie is essentially about characters that are chasing the dragon. You know, they're just, that's what they're doing. They're chasing the very first high, whatever it was that they had, you know, and it's like, much like someone chases a drug, much like someone chases sex, much like chases any addiction that exists, basically. And I think that the, much like drug dealers, first taste is free. The Cenobites are just like, yeah. You know, like we'll show you what you need to see, so to speak. But once you're in, and you can't escape us. And no matter how far you run, we will find you. Right? So,
Well, they didn't even seem like they knew Frank had gotten away
no,
from
until
them.
Kirstie tells them.
Well, because Kirsty, because the dad is like, I think Julia's really lonely and like she never leaves the house.
House.
Can you go over there sometime and, you know, just try to help her out. Like I know you two don't get along, but like help me out. Try to be a friend to her. Go over there. So then Kirsty goes to the house and she sees Julia bringing one of her
One of the
afternoon
dudes.
dudes. And
Yep.
so, you know, Kirsty wants to know what's going on because she thinks that Julia is cheating on her dad, which he is. And then that's where she discovers, or that's when guy number three is trying to escape, and she discovers like that Frank is still alive, and you know they're killing people, and then she runs off, and I don't know if it's shock or something like that, that then that's why she ends up in the hospital, like that she just collapses
Yeah.
from shock, like that's what I'm assuming, because she wasn't really hurt. Maybe they thought she was because she was covered in Frank's blood, but then when she's in the hospital and she has the box with her and she starts playing with
Playing
it,
with it.
and I feel like the box should be a bit more complicated to open up, that just randomly messing with it, because I was thinking to myself, like if I like the box would be something like you would want to have lo locked up. Like it's like worse than a gun, where like if your kids would come across it and be like, oh, look, I'm just gonna play with this Rubik's Cube kind of thing, and then like your kids are off with the Cenobites, and but then yeah, she opens the box by mistake, And they are just like, we don't care that you didn't mean to do this. Like you opened it. Like, these are the rules. Like, you open the box and like, this is what happens to you. Like, that's it. And then she's like, oh, well, didn't you like tear apart my Uncle Frank like not too long ago? And they're like, oh yeah. And she says, well, he's not actually dead. Like, he's living in my house right now if you want to come get him. And I'll take you to him, but then you've got to let me go. And and he's just like, maybe, you know, like very, you know, like, and like I grew up with a mother who always said maybe, and like, I know maybe
means that, no.
Yeah. Like, we're just not going to argue about this right now, but maybe means that we're actually still going to do what I want to do, but I'm going to let you think that we're going to do what you want to do.
There's a chance. There's like, a chance.
Yeah. Maybe I'll let you go. You know, wink, wink.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is like, we meet, you know, everybody, I asked Slink about this because he said that in Hellbound Heart, Chatterer is the muscle of the group. Like, Chatterer is the enforcer of the group. He's the violent, the violent one, right? Like, let's narrow that one down, shall we? But no, the Chatterer essentially is the one who grabs her, puts her in a headlock, and then sticks his fingers in her mouth so she can't, you know, say anything or do anything. So then when Larry discovers what's going on and Frank's basically gonna like take his skin and make a skin suit out of Larry, you know, then yeah, there's so much to unpack with this. You know, there's a scene where the Cenobites are in the attic and they point at the flayed body. And they're just like, we want the man who did this. Like, and that's awesome. Like, that's a great scene too. Cause she's trying to explain that it's not her dad, but her dad at this point, his skin suit is being worn by Frank. So, you know.
Well, it's cause she's so worried about him and everything, and she gets to the house and then she's so relieved thinking that he's okay. It's like, we need to get out of here, because she knows that Julia and Frank only mean, you know, her father harm. And she's like, we need to get out of here. But now, you know, her dad is dead.
Yeah.
You know, her dad is dead. And, you know, Frank is wanting to assume, you know, Larry's life, and I guess have these two you know, women, and they're going to be this happy, dysfunctional, you know, weird, incestual family.
Taboo and, American style. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And her dad is dead, but I guess he's still like you can kind of tell by like, and I'm surprised she didn't realize that like something's wrong. She's like, oh, daddy, you're okay. But yet,
yeah, she
got,
goes
like,
to hug him. He's got
all
blood,
over his head,
blood pouring down his
forehead. It's like, you can't realize that like there's something, you know, something's gone on.
Not your dad.
And, you know, and yeah, so, and then he says, then I think he says like the come to daddy thing. And that's when she realizes that that's not, you know, that's not really
not her dad.
You know, that's not really her father. Then they end up in the room. They end up in the room where Frank originally came back to life. And he says his name, like he says, come to Frank, come to Uncle Frank.
Yep.
And that's the proof that the Cenobites needed that, you know, this is that's him. And then they come and.
Yep. Yeah. The Cenobites play dirty pool. Because, you know, they Kirsty had it in her head that if she brought them Frank, that she was fine. She was free and clear. Turns out, no, that's not the case. And the Cenobites try to take her back with them. And then the sort of boyfriend shows up. I don't even know his name. Do you know his name?
Steve.
Steve. Steve shows up.
Steve. Yeah, Steve shows up. Yeah.
And that weird, like, rawhead Rex basket case monster starts menacing them, because there's this other, I don't know what that is, and I asked I did. I asked, like, I was like, you've read the fucking book? Like, and he's just like, I don't know.
Well, he re that creature reminds me of the little demons in the gate. Like
Those
his
demons.
head reminds me
Yes.
that, like, he's, I don't know if that's like the dad or
Yes.
like he reminds me of the little demons from the gate in like
Oh.
a bigger version. And I don't know if that's part of, because sometimes when the way that she turns the box, I'm not sure if that's just something that wasn't explored,
Right.
that like there's that you can summon other things, because when she was in the hospital, you know, the wall came apart and there's this hallway, which I would never have gone down. But I guess since it's a movie, you kind of can't be like, yeah, fuck that, and then like move on. So, but yeah, then she encounters that thing and she's a fighter. Like she beats that thing off. Like she did not need Steve to rescue her.
No,
Like
Steve is really
she's,
useless.
yeah,
Like,
I don't know if like you feel like,
no,
you
he's.
kind of, I don't know if the 80s still, they felt like, oh, we got to send a man in to make sure she's okay. But she was totally, absolutely capable on her own of, you know, she fought off everything that came, you know, that came her way and was able to escape. And she was able to get rid of the Cenobites, which getting rid of the Cenobites was also way too easy. That
Oh
like
yeah, it was
you just need to
just
take them, like, oh, like why didn't, you know, like Frank's probably like, why didn't I think of that? Like, all I gotta do is put the box back to how it originally was. I'm like, ah, oh, it's all okay now.
It's like,
It's fine.
and then Clive Barker turns into a dragon and flies away. Like, it's
With the
just
box that
with the
ends up back
box.
with the Chinese, with that ends up back with the Chinese
We're back at the
guy.
swap meet again in Morocco, and what's your pleasure, sir? And credits.
From what I got from further research was that they had to keep making Hellraiser movies or they were going to lose the rights. So at
Oh.
one point, they were just taking some random script that was on the shelf, changing the, you know, changing the bad guy to Pinhead and like sending it off.
That's
So
interesting.
one and two are probably the ones I've seen the most, but I think I've also seen the third one. I saw the one with Craig Schaefer, whatever his
Yeah, the
name.
one where he's the
Can't
cop.
remember. I can't
Yeah.
remember. That's the Faustian one that like I
Yep.
can't remember the name of. And then there was one with Henry Cavill that I think was much more like they could get you through the internet or something like that. So you know, there's people that criticize and say like, oh, it the sequels got so far away from like what the original movie was and what the, you know, like what the Cenobites were. But all franchises get that way.
Of
I
course.
mean Jason went to space. I mean that's nothing, you know, that's, you know, and like Jason goes to hell, like it's this weird, like hidden kind of thing where he's
Right.
jumping bodies. I mean,
There's a lot of everything's strange.
I think once you get to a certain part in the franchise, you know, they're just like, what haven't we done? And
Right.
you know, and that's so I don't so much have a problem with that, but I think one and two are really, I mean, I think unless I was really wanting to say, you know, do like a marathon or something like that to say I've done it, I think I'm not even sure two is necessary because I feel like once you start taking the mystery away, there's not as much scariness anymore. So once you get to a point where you're talking about how the box you know, how the box was made and how the Cenobites came to be where they are, you know, then you start sympathizing with characters and all this stuff. And I feel like you need to have a certain kind of mystery. I think what you come up with in your head is as far as how did they get to be this way? Like how did the end, like some shit, like major shit must have happened for this guy to have like nails, you know, put into his head. I feel like once you start explaining that kind of stuff, like some things get lost. And I think the second one also, it's been a while since I've seen the second one, but I think the second one really makes Julia a lot less sympathetic, that like now she's just like she's irredeemably evil and no longer in any way sympathetic. First one to me is the only one that's really scary and horrifying. And once things start getting clarified, I feel like something just gets lost.
I completely agree with you on this because it's how I feel about Black Christmas, because I absolutely adore the original Black Christmas, and I love it because it is essentially about a total psychopath who's cuckoo bananas, who climbs into a sorority house, terrorizes a bunch of women, and and continues to do so because, spoiler alert, guys. But then they made, oh my God, Christ on a cracker. They made the remake, and then they made the feminist one, and then they made, and it's like,
I
I don't.
actually liked all those.
Oh, so
Not as
see,
much,
yeah.
but I feel
But
like
see,
there is merit.
I just didn't want, I didn't want a Billy origin story for me. Like, to me, the scariest part of Billy is that he is just this, like, without reason, without any kind of logic or anything of the sort, he's just doing what he's doing. And to me, that's far scarier than, like, oh, and then he had a sister and th this happened, and then they made cookies out of everybody, and then he killed somebody with an ice skate. What I like about the original is that everything is very ambiguous, and I think that just makes it more uncomfortable and scary to me, because,
Well, a lot of the horror movies that I was seeing when I was 10, when I was 10 and my horror movie watching at 10, like you see, like they were much less complex movies, like the Jason movies, it was just like you have sex, you get killed. But it was just like this juvenile, like teenagers
Sex and
having
hack it
sex.
up. Yeah.
Like that it was just like the problem was just if you're having sex, this will happen to you.
Yes,
But
absolutely.
Hellraiser was much more complicated about what sexual relationships are and
Are.
where sexual relationships can lead you, and like that there's a destructive force to sex, and or there can be a destructive force to sex, and like that can be what kills you and everyone around you is when that sex gets extremely perverted. That it's not just the sex act itself that's going to get you killed. It's this depravity that's going to lead to your downfall.
Oh, love
And
that. No, that's so good. This is why I
I
had you on the show,
know
Michelle.
George is going to be so proud of me because I feel like I'm channeling my inner George here and
You're
being
bringing it.
intellectual,
You are. You're dropping mics and knowledge.
and again, like I think 87 was one of the very was a very very formative year in my life. And I don't know if it's at 10, like it's like right around that stage where you're not quite a kid anymore, but you're not quite yet a
Right.
teenager, because it was like because 87 was The Lost Boys and Near Dark
Predator.
and all these great movies. And it's and then like not even like necessarily horror movies too. It was like Dirty Dancing and still
Less
stuff
than
like that.
zero,
But
87. Yeah.
And so it's just these movies, I can't, like there's just something where I still remember how it felt seeing this stuff at the time, and how new, and how new it was, and everything that like you remember how, like I'll always remember how it felt when I first saw those spinning boards with all the body parts attached. Like, I'd never ever seen anything like that. And yeah, 87 was such a great movie
Great
year.
year, man. It was.
Was a great movie year.
That's amazing. If people would like to get in touch with you and your vast expanse of horror knowledge, where can they do so, Michelle?
Oh, what, to have access to my vast knowledge?
Well, let's talk about how we, yeah, let's, like, first of all, let's talk about how we met for instance, because we are, we're internet friends, but how, what group and all of that good stuff, because I think that's the important thing, because I'm very proud to be part of Friends of Horror Weekly. I feel like George created this safe space, if you will, where horror fans can come and have discourse and everything like that. And I feel like you do such a good job moderating it.
I was living in California and I was very much like social media is just this destructive, toxic force, blah, blah, blah. Like I don't need anything, I don't need to have anything to do with it. And then I moved back to Pennsylvania and where in the city where I grew up that I hated. And I was just like, if I'm going to survive being back here again, I need to find some kind of community and be involved in things, or, it's just gonna kill, it's just gonna kill me. And so a lot of community events and things like that were all things that were posted on Facebook for
Facebook.
things that were going on around, around the city and, volunteer things and stuff like that. And somehow I wanted to be involved in horror groups of some kind, and I found that Horror Weekly had the most followers, so that was where I, why I started following that page. And then I found out about the podcast and eventually was like, you know what, like I should really be supporting this since I enjoy it. And that's how I became part of the subscriber group. It takes a community and stuff like that, but like
Takes a village.
I was really the one that started posting things and started, I guess there wasn't really a lot of engagement before I joined the group. And then I was there with like, here's this meme and blah, blah, blah. And then things kind of grew and you got, and I don't belong to any other Facebook groups. So when people talk about how some of the other horror communities are, like, I can't really re relate to that. I mean, I see how things get on the Horror Weekly main page where people are like, you're an idiot, Halloween H2O is the greatest movie ever. You're an idiot. Like, I posted something once about that. I was saying, like, something like the only thing worse than like Josh Hartnett's hair was like how bad that movie was itself. And somebody was like, you're an idiot. Like, Halloween H2O is the greatest movie ever. And so I have limited engagement with that. But like, the Horror Weekly, the Friends of Horror Weekly community, like, I have a lot of very, very good friends in that group. And it's it feels weird to kind of say that, because I think the generation that we're at, it's hard for us to see online relationships sometimes as being just as real as what you've got going on in the
Agreed.
world. But I never would have anticipated, like, I got asked to be on the Screen Divers podcast. I'm on here. Like, things have happened in my life from being a part of that group that have really changed me and made me a better, have made me a better person. And I feel like it's that way for a lot of people, that I feel like there's some people in the group who've kind of either not felt like they had a voice or felt like their voice was stupid and don't feel that way anymore. And I feel like I mean, I'm not going to say I'm responsible for that, but to an extent, I am, and I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud that of helping people, and say who you are is okay, and you've got something great to say, and you're a great person, and and we're here for each other, and we love each other, and this, and you can say whatever you want here, and if we don't agree with you, we're just gonna say this is what I think, and not be like you're stupid. And as much as I want the community to continue to grow, I also want, I like that it's growing slowly, because sometimes when things, I've been a part of things sometimes that have exploded, and then it just becomes like a small semblance of like what it was, where you don't even recognize what you were originally doing and what the group originally was, that it just becomes this, you know, this, I don't want it to become, you know, toxic and, you know, where it just grows too fast and then gets just destroyed. And, but yeah, there are a lot of really amazing people that are in the group. And I feel extremely blessed and George is great. And when I was originally, cause I'm a doer, I'm a doer. So not too long into the group, it was like, okay, like I want to start, like I want to do book club and I want to do this and I want, you know, and all this stuff. And like, but I felt like I needed to ask George's permission in order, cause it was like, oh, like, you know, I know it's like our community, but it's people that are supporting your podcast. So I don't want everybody to leave because of something. And George was basically like, do whatever you want. So, and that's basically what I've been doing ever since, like for the last year. There's been weekly watch parties pretty much for the last, you know, for the last year. And yeah, it's, I actually have to watch that I don't spend too much time. I don't want to spend too much time talking, you know, like I feel like sometimes my day is just like talking to people in the group and doing stuff with the group all day. And it's like, oh, I got nothing else done, but it's a great, like it's very, very much a nurturing, wonderful place.
Yeah. And I agree with literally everything you said. Like, I'm gonna get a fucking neck ache from just going nod, 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 you know, because it's I agree with everything. And it does, it just creates this really cool space. It's like having a horror clubhouse, you know. And yeah, man, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you, because I love your voice, and being a voice in horror that is female, and being a voice in horror that, you know, doesn't necessarily like the stuff that's super popular, and is not afraid to say it in a respectful manner. And I dig that about you. I really do. Cause yeah, that's cool. It's cool to have, you know, another woman that has those types of opinions and it's just like, eh, you know.
Well, I mean, I could still be like, this movie sucks, but you know, but I give reasons for it. Cause like, George and I are very yin and yang in like the types of movies that we like. Like he loves the slow burn.
Slow burn. He's a slow burn guy.
You know, and that's great, you know. And I'm the one that likes the balls to the wall, you know, like the Tucker and Dale and the Dead Alive and, you know, the trauma movies and things like that. And I'm like, this movie's terrible, I love it. So you know, he and I feel like we're a good balance, because you know, I keep people from getting too highbrow in the group. You know, when I feel that happening, I'm like, okay, like we gotta watch like Tokyo Gore Police or something like that now, because we've been watching too much like serious intellectual stuff. So we gotta throw out something strange. But yeah, thank you for having me on, because it's rare for me to, when I first meet somebody or start talking to somebody, feeling like, it's easy, you know?
Oh yeah,
it's easy, and you've got a lot to talk about, and you just kind of bond right away. Like that's pretty rare. That's pretty rare for me. Yeah, I mean, that's why I had no problem like talking about my sex life and stuff like that, because I'm like, my parents aren't going to listen to this. Like,
I know my sister's parents not going to listen to this.
No one in my family's going to listen to this. Nobody, like nobody, you know, like nobody I actually know in real life's going to be like, gee, Michelle, like. Great. You know, you're a whore.
Oh, what a great note to end on. I love that so much. All right, so hopefully said whore will come back to the show, and we can talk about other great stuff about, you know, horror and being in your 40s. If you do want to follow Manic Movie Monday, we have a presence on Instagram. We were on Blue Sky, but apparently I don't know my login anymore, so that's over. But yes, Instagram is the best place to follow us. And we love it when people leave comments. We definitely will air an episode, but who knows what movie it will be. So it's part of our manic charm, I guess. Anyway, keep it here till next week, folks. And as always, stay manic.